Hey there, and welcome to the Confident Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Brooks. Join me as I sit down and chat with co-hosts, friends, and carefully curated guests and talk about all the things that empower you to become your best and most confident self. So let's get started. Hey there, and welcome back. So today we have with us Judy Weber, a business expansion expert, master certified coach, and host of the globally ranked Joyful Business podcast. With a background as a former trial lawyer and C-suite exec, Judy helps Christian women entrepreneurs grow with calm, confidence, and miraculous results rooted in faith. So, welcome, Judy. I would love for you to share with our listeners a little bit more about you and the works that you do. And of course, you've got an amazing story, which I know you do. Would love for you to share that with our listeners.
Oh, thank you, Rachel, for having me. So excited to be here. You know, I'm a women's advocate, so that's where my story begins, middles, and ends, right? I was raised by a set of parents who loved Jesus and loved me fiercely. There was a lot of dysfunction, though. We were poor folk, a lot of arguing, mostly about money, mostly about the lack of money. And so my dad would work 2 and 3 jobs as a factory worker. And mom stayed home and, you know, she cooked and cleaned and did all the things. But one thing she did was really pour into me. And she would say, Jude, there's followers and leaders. I want you to be a leader. God made you to be a leader. And so I was raised in thinking I'm a leader. And, you know, I remember as a little girl, I always knew I was going to go to college, even though nobody else I knew, no other family member went to college, but I just knew I'm going to go to college. And as I got closer to college age, I remember one time my mom, not my dad, my mom said, Jude, I know you want to go to school, but I just don't know how we're going to do it. I said, Mom, don't worry about it. If I got to take out loans, all kind of loans, I'll do it. So that's kind of neat that I just knew that God built me. Like, this is what you're doing. I'm driven, you know? But I remember when mom introduced me to Jesus, it was a Sunday night in the living room. And I remember her saying, girls, I'm a twin sister. So she said to us, girls, you have a big brother. And now I had 3 other big brothers. My oldest was 13 years older. So I immediately look around, where is he, Mom? Is he married already? You know, I was like, I didn't know. So from that night, I really felt like Jesus was with me. Like I just felt an immediate close connection to him. Anyway, weeks, months later, I went to my mom and said, Mommy, God told me I'm going to do something very important. And Mommy, I might even be a millionaire. And I kind of remember my mom like poo-pooing it like, we're going to be millionaires. Yeah, right. But I just always had that drive. So fast forward, I went to college. The interesting thing there might be for your listeners, if you're raised in humble beginnings, like I thought it was amazing that I had this opportunity to go to college. And so I didn't know the difference between Penn State and University of Pennsylvania. College is college. Like I didn't know the difference. And so I applied to one school. Do you know what school that was?
Penn State.
No. Oh, gosh, no. It was my, yeah, sorry, but no. My music teacher. So I decided I always wanted to be a lawyer or a teacher. But as much as I was smart, or so I thought, right, and I thought I could do it, I thought, but really people like me, we can go to college, but we can't go to law school. So then I decided that I was going to major in music education. And so I was taking piano since I was like 10. And I said, where did you go to school? She said, Susquehanna University. And I go, okay, great. And that's the one school I applied to and I got in and whatever. But that was just an interesting aside that I didn't even understand that one school was different or better than another. But anyway, after graduating, number 3 in the entire class, coming home, expecting that I was going to get my pick of music teacher jobs. There was nothing there. At least on the East Coast is what I was told. And I was getting rejected and I'm like, wait, what? And one, they even called me the day before I was getting married. This is a month after graduation. And they go, can you come in for an interview? And I go, well, I'm getting married tomorrow. And then I thought, man, they're going to hire me because they're going to see that I'm organized. Nope, got rejected from that. But God had a plan. So I'll take you fast forward. I had sales jobs. I worked at retail, worked in outside sales, and ultimately worked for Dictaphone. They make recorders and machines for lawyers to dictate for their secretaries and stuff. Anyway, it was a Friday night. I was 25 or 6. And the sales call, he was just a jerk. and he had his own firm. And I left that office, Rachel, and I'm like, I look up and I said, Lord, if that guy can be a lawyer, I know I can do it. I'm doing it. I don't know how I'm doing it, but I'm doing it. So anyway, then I took my LSAT, all as well. Got into Villanova, graduated top of the class, got a great job. Here's the thing. Had this great job. On the eve of starting work as an associate in this law firm, my mom, who I knew was smart, but I thought she was not smart like with things like this, she said, Judy, be careful. I said, be careful about what? She goes, it's a man's world. Just be careful. Mm. And I remember saying, Mom, what do you think this is? It's 1995. It took me just like a month or less when I realized that Mom knew exactly what she was talking about. It was, you know, then I got pregnant 4 months later and I was blackballed. Oh, you don't want to be a partner, I guess. How dare you get pregnant? What the freak? Anyway, so there's lots of windy roads. Switched law jobs, ultimately left the law when I had three boys. Within a month of that, I started my first business. This is back in 2003. As a home, what do you call it? Interior decorator. I had zero experience, but what I had is a knack for it. Everybody walk in my house and say, oh my gosh, I love how you decorate. Can you help me? And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I can do this thing. Real quick, I'll sum it up and I'll take a breath. I, as a strategic thinker, as a lawyer, and this is what I teach my clients, how to think strategically to win. When I decided that I was going to be an interior decorator, I thought, what is going to be the quickest path to clients? And there just so happened, God's timing, that there was a home show. And so I rented a, and I picked the one on the corner, and I was very intentional about how I was going to set up my, then what I was going to do to draw people in and how I was going to incentivize them to make appointments. I left the weekend with 14 appointments. 10 of those 14 became clients. So then I had another problem. Oh my goodness. Now I have all this. I have my little, my two-year-old. He was my little design assistant. But fast forwarding it to there, I went from that, ultimately left that. I can see if you want, I'll tell you exactly why. But then I went back to the law, got divorced. Somewhere along the way, got my real estate license. I was always a part-time realtor while I was a full-time stay-at-home mom or a full-time lawyer. And then remarried and got asked to be general counsel of a multi-million dollar international firm. And I'm like, it's amazing. Where did this come from, Lord? Thank you. And that was so, such a great experience. I loved, honest to God, everybody there except the owner of the place. He would say, Judy, I don't want a yes man in this spot. And believe me, I pushed back. I managed the litigation throughout Canada and the world. And then a couple of times he who wasn't a litigator, but he would try to tell me as I'm dealing with outside counsel, strategic decisions. And I'm like, Gary, that won't be good. He's like, you're going to do it my way or you're going to whatever, you know? So ultimately after 2 years of that, I left. And that was back in 2017 when I started business coaching. Mm. So I'll take a breath and you can.
Oh my gosh. I love this. And before we hit record, I told Judy, because I met Judy a couple months back and I said, I was so enamored by her story. And then we got to reconnect a few weeks later, and she was just telling a little bit more of this version. And this is the first time I've heard the full version in one sitting. I'm like, wow. So you have been clawing your way up tooth and nail and fighting against what your mom had said, a man's world, and coming up against so many obstacles, so many challenges. And you knew that you had your work cut out for you, but you knew at the very beginning you're destined for greatness. There's something in you, which we already talked about, is Christ. And that was the fuel that propelled you into, I'm not going to be a follower. I am a leader. And it's just, you had that set in your heart from the very get-go, and you've literally embodied it and stepped into it. You know, as Judy's sharing all these different, you know, side winding roads that have led her back to where she is, because she knew intentionally what her purpose and her calling was. So I love this, Judy. You have just unpacked so much that gave me a couple notes that I wrote down here, but I love what you said about strategic thinkers to think strategically to win. And that was a philosophy and a mindset that you inherited early on. And now that's something that you've not only carried to your life, but helping your clients do as well. So when we talk about strategic thinking, did you even have this planned out? I know you said I'm going to, but like, could you ever imagine your life today as it was, you know, growing up and coming through these winding roads?
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. I mean, if you would see my first home, it did have four bedrooms, but there were 9 people living there. Is that right? No, it's 8 people living there, 1 bathroom, no air conditioning. I mean, you know, but I didn't know I was poor until I went to college. Isn't that funny? I really didn't know I was poor until I went to college. And I never felt poor. Like some people got cars when they graduated high school. I got like the opportunity to go to college. I was so grateful. And this idea of strategic thinking, when I left the practice of law in 2003, my older brother, he knew I spent 6 figures on my Villanova education. And he said, "Judy, how does it feel that you spend all that money and it's a waste?" Mm. And at the time, I was so mad. I go, "What the heck are you talking about?" But years later, I just realized that I use the way they taught me to think every day. You can take the lawyer out of the courtroom, but you can't take the courtroom and that legal mind and legal thinking out of the lawyer. And so it's fun because that is a primary tenet of what I teach my clients. Because there is nothing that can stop us from moving forward in God's plan for us.
Amen to that. And, you know, so much of what you shared, I can relate to, you know, growing up very poor, and I didn't know I was poor until when I said, "I get free lunch," and they said, "No, that's not because you're cool." I said, "Look at me, I'm the winner, I won free lunches." And they're like, "No, it's because you're poor." And I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm just going to shrink back here." And I was the second in my family to go to college. My brother, he was first born, and I'm third in line. But my oldest brother, he went to school and went on to do his law degree as well. And I was the first female. And so I knew what it was to go to school and then to come find out your sophomore year that there's no more grants, loans, and funding available, and you have to make a decision. And you're like, "Well, what do I do? Do I drop out or do I go to a different school that doesn't feel like it's aiding me into where I thought I was going to be?" So it's, you know, when you talk about knowing before it's laid out in front of you, I guess, and having that plan, but intentionally working at it every single day, despite your circumstances and situation. And so as you're sharing your story and all that you have learned and unpacked through all these years, your strategic thinking, the experiences in the legal space, overcoming obstacles into a man's world, you bring this full circle, and now you empower women. As you said, you're an advocate for women. How would you say you're showing your clients that what is possible for them? And I assume that many of your clients come to you with very similar backstories and experiences, is that they know they're destined for more, but what does that more look like?
Mm, okay, what does the more look like? That's so good. I want to address something that I didn't tell in my story, and I think that your listeners will appreciate this. I know, unfortunately, that there are others who have this as well. I married my high school sweetheart, and I got beat up on my wedding night. And for the, I guess, 5 months or so that we were married, I endured a lot. Physical, emotional, mental abuse. And there was a time after I, by God's grace, which was a whole God story, that I got out of that, I initially thought, like, I can't talk about this. It was like taboo because I felt like I somehow brought it on myself. And all these years later, I'm week shy, day shy, actually, of 59. So I've had a lot of living. That happened day shy of 22. So, you know, I just want the listeners to hear, like, you might say, "Oh, you know, she says she was poor, but maybe there's somebody." There was nobody. Like, my family is like poor folk. Okay. But I love it because what they taught me was work ethic. And so by God's grace, when I got out of that horrible relationship, I had my mom and dad. I had my siblings' support. And I know that there probably is more than one woman listening right now who doesn't have that. And for you, I just say, God bless. I don't know how I could have done it without Christ, obviously, and without my strong family supporting me. But I just want all of our listeners to know, like, reach out to me, because helping you and encouraging you is what God built me for. And I'm getting a little emotional on that. But as I talk to my clients about what is that more for them, I am constantly pointing to Christ to say, what does God tell you? There's things in the Bible that he tells all his girls, all his followers, right? But what has God told you in that one-to-one private time? And I'll be the first to confess that there have been seasons in my life when I was not diligent in that. And more than that, like where God didn't come first. At night, I'd say, "Ooh, do I have a few minutes?" You know, it's like, wait, what? How do you not have like more than just a few minutes to squeeze him in, you know? So in my no matter what container you're working with me in, I'm always saying, what does God tell you? And what is his vision? And a lot of times, really, let's say all the time, the vision is hard for us to imagine because Ephesians 3:20, my life verse, he is able to do abundantly more, like immeasurably more than we can ask or even imagine. And so it's about taking these blinders off of looking at what we think is possible in the natural and realizing that, man, God has so much more for us. We really have to die to self, die to those insecurities, die to all the trauma and the garbage and say, okay, Lord, what do you have for me? And go for it.
I love that you mentioned, you know, spending that time with God. How many of us just get up and grind through our day because it's ingrained in us through the society and culture, this hustle mentality that we are self-starters, we're self-sufficient, and we're self-made, and it's very self-centered. And I've realized even in my own journey that I tried that path indirectly, and I think that was before, very much before I knew in my relationship with Christ now that that is not the way to go, because that has led to multiple times of burnout. Mm-hmm. And I think that in that chase for that more, because we're trying externally to fill an internal void, and that's the chase that leads us off path. And it's just, it's damning to our spirit, to our purpose, and to everything when we feel like our existence here isn't aligning with what we feel is called. And I think that that goes back to the intentional time that we sit with God in prayer, in quiet time, and listen to that still inner voice that it's fighting for our attention in a very noisy world. So I love how you put that, because sometimes we don't know that God is in the mix, because we might get so caught up in thinking, well, we're doing what we think that God has told us to do. We get caught up in the doing that we forget the being. And that's where the presence of the Lord is right here speaking to us.
Amen. Amen. If I can say two things on that, it's so true. Like, by surrendering to Christ and not worrying how you will get things done, like mm-hmm. to your point, the doing, we're working 10 times harder because we're making it fall on our shoulders. We're feeling the pressure. Do we have work to do? Whether it's working in corporate, working for ourselves, parenting, you know, being a good citizen of the community. Yeah, we have some work to do. But when we try to do it ourselves, we are working 10 times, 100 times more than we need to, because God wants us to work in communion with him, in trust, and from a sense of joy and peace. And can I say joyful expectation of what he told you is coming. It may not be as quickly as we might like, you know, but God is in the details. Make no mistake. So when we exclude him, we're going to suffer.
Yes, exactly. And I've been there. So listeners, I feel like I've taken some of those backlashings here for you. And I know that Judy is nodding her head too. She's like, yeah, I've taken that for so many of us women. That's why we're passionate about the works that we do, because we want to help shortcut some of those pain points, those sticking points that delay you in really stepping into your power and your purpose. And so when you work with your clients, and I know that you have a system that helps them get that clarity, gain that confidence, and walk with a sense of peace and calmness internally, I'd love for you to unpack a little bit of that.
Yeah, I mean, this whole idea of power thinking is what I call it, where we are intentionally and strategically thinking on all things, starting with your best client. For those entrepreneurs out there, you need to, I'm going to say it, obsess over your best client. You need to know her, him, they, whoever they are, very, very well. And I just don't mean demographics, or they live here, or even psychographics, but really, like, what does their day look like? And not just if you're a health coach about their meals, but you know what? Or a business coach with their business, their whole life. Like, what are they thinking about when they wake up? Here we are Wednesday at 1:30. What are they doing right now? What are they thinking? What are they praying for? What are they sick of? You know, like, you really have to know that. And so when you make decisions, you need, you know, the output's only going to be as good as the input. So really, the best client you need to focus on. But I always say we have to operate supernaturally, not naturally. And that is so counterintuitive. Like, okay, Jude, I tried this, I did that, and it didn't work. Well, let's examine that a second. if someone says, you know, my lead magnet didn't work, that so is unhelpful to me to help them and them to evaluate it, right? It's like, okay, well, how did it not work? Are people not signing up for it? Are like, where are you taking them? Like, there's so much to do there. But I want to give you the three things that I say we need to operate from, like supernaturally, from a place of calm, confidence, and certainty. Okay, calm. I remember as a young lawyer, I was, when you first start, you don't have your own cases, but after a while you do. And one time I got this nasty, nasty letter from opposing counsel, and I run into the partner's office and I go, and she looks at it and she's like, so what? And I go, and she's like, so what? You know, like, she's like, it's fine. He's just posturing, whatever. But the point of there is, because I've experienced things like that in the law, in business, you know, in my own business as well as corporate, I realized that no matter what happens, it's okay. We shouldn't flip out. We shouldn't say it's the end of the world. I know some women who get so upset if they get a nasty comment on their YouTube or social. It's okay. They're not your best client. I mean, we love them and we send them on our way, but we don't care, right? Because we have to protect ourselves. That's like a place of calm. And then confidence. Confidence, you know, you mentioned about self. I believe that self is like at the root of all sin. The only self that the Bible talks about in a positive way is self-control. And isn't that great? Because we self-control to surrender, self-control to trust the Lord, that kind of thing. But confidence is really confidence in the Lord and what he said. So, you know, if he called you to something in Hebrews, I think it's 13:21, you know, God promised that where he calls you, he will equip you. And you're anointed, you're appointed, you're called, you will be equipped. Like, let's not freak out, for lack of a better word, when things don't go our way. No matter what, we need to remain confident. And then the third is certainty. And this may be the most important, because certainty straddles everything. Certainty in who Christ is. Certainty in who you are and what you're called to. Certainty as to who all these decisions, who is my best client? Oh, am I going to make a decision? Oh, they don't seem to be coming after 2 weeks. Now I'm going to change my best client. No. It's certainty. And then also certainty to other areas, marketing. You need to be certain of your convictions. What do you think about your work and your industry that the gurus think otherwise? And you've got to be so certain with your convictions that you can argue, quote unquote, I'm a lawyer, that's how I think, you have evidence that why you're right and they're wrong. And then the final place of certainty, which is the biggie, is sales, which, let's be real, we are selling on our social. We are selling on this podcast, right? Like, you are selling someone to listen. It's an invitation. I'm inviting you to listen. I'm inviting you to download this lead magnet. I'm inviting you to work with me, right? But selling is really a transfer of certainty. And so if we're not certain that we're an expert, we are never going to be able to, you know, not convince or even persuade somebody that we are. So called confidence and certainty, so important.
I love how you just unpacked that. I'm taking all the kind of notes here because I think it's really important to go back. And when you look at calm, when you're calm, you have a place of clarity. And I think that is important because when we look at where we're going in our direction, again, reiterating the noisy world out there, because there's so many shiny objects, there's this guru, that leader, that expert, whoever it is that you're following, it's important to discern which is for you and which ones are not. And that gives you that sense of calm and peace to know that you can start pursuing that path with that confidence. And so I love that you talk about with confidence that the only self that's in there is self-control. So self-control and that discipline, right? So when we know that we have to die and surrender our wills, our ways to ones of his, it's just higher and above anything that we could ever imagine, it's trusting and fully surrendering. And that's one of the hardest things is when we look at surrendering, we tend to think, oh my gosh, I'm giving up control and I'm such a control freak. Like, how is this going to turn out? And what we've done is indirectly turn that back onto self. And so that does not serve. That is a self-serving, self-fulfilling prophecy. Is that what it is? Something like that, right? Because we're just thinking of ourselves. We're not thinking about, well, where does my confidence come from? And prior, you had mentioned, I think it was before we hit record, when you had mentioned this, and I love it. You said, confidence comes down to being you. And so much of what we talk about on this podcast is to reiterate that importance of authenticity. So my question back to you listeners is, who are you? So for you to step fully confident into this version that you have been called and equipped for, we got to ask ourselves today, who are we today? Not the version we were in our past and those stories, those excuses, the lies, the beliefs that we have inherited and kept with us, but the version of you today that is going to shape you into the version of who you're becoming. And that, again, is abiding with what the truth and the word says, but also knowing your own unique gifts, talents, abilities, and skills, because that helps shape and sharpen our identity, because that gives us confidence and certainty that you had talked about is the third one. Certainty being the most important because of who you are in Christ. That is so important because your identity, the world can rob you and strip you of it. You can get all kinds of mean, nasty messages. You can have all kinds of flops and failures and mistakes, but none of that defines you. And that is the importance of that identity, because the identity gives you certainty. Certainty gives you confidence. Confidence gives you clarity and a sense of calm inner peace. Love it. Love it, Judy.
So good. Hey, what you said prompted some things for me. So tell me what you think about this. Okay. When we're not, I have a couple things. First, when we're not calm, here's what happens. High emotions, low intellect. When we make decisions from that place of frantic or fear, you will never get a good result from that ever. So let's stay low emotions, like keep emotion out of it. Business is business. Okay. Like we care about people, but decisions are made, you know, more from a higher place, right? It's more strategic. So low emotions, so you have high intellect to be able to make really sound decisions. The other thing I want your listeners to hear is that we don't get what we want. We get who we are. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, I used to respect this person. I really am not so much lately. And one of the things that really turned me was that she was talking about an alter ego. And this is someone who calls themselves Christian. Look, I'm not judging hearts, but I am being discerning. She was talking about, hey, if you get nervous on sales calls or on stages or whatever the case, then be like Beyonce right there. Forget it. But be like Beyonce. You know how she calls herself a different name on stage? Do an alter ego. Here I am with fake hair and fake makeup because I am now, and then she made up some name. And I just thought, you know what? Wait a minute. I was sitting in a room where you were on stage and you used this word authenticity. And now you're talking about alter egos. That doesn't jive, right? You are who you are. You are who God says you are, regardless of whatever you may think you are. You see what I'm saying? And the last thing I'll say on this is, imposter syndrome. Have we ever met a woman who didn't say she struggled with imposter syndrome? Do you know why we struggle with imposter syndrome? Because I believe that the enemy is telling you who you're not. And because you're believing it, then our Holy Spirit prickling is going on. It's like, whoa, 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 you're believing a lie. So we are so much more and so much capable because of Christ working in us than we even allow, because we trust the enemy unintentionally. But that's who we're listening to all too often.
Such great points. And I love that you brought up, you know, we're not judging. We're looking at the discerned spirit between the hearts. Like, we have a heart posture that is for Christ. And when one speaks out of alignment, we have to question that. And it's not questioning them, but questioning our own integrity as well, saying, that doesn't align with me. So I love that you brought that up, because, as again, authenticity, transparency, and vulnerability are three values that we, with the confident woman, adhere to. Because when we can unpack and just vulnerably share and show up in our rawness, our realness, our messiness, our ugliness, right? Because what does that do? It, one, strips us down and makes us just human. Two, it creates relatability. It creates a sense of empathy and compassion and understanding. And it brings people closer instead of projecting this alter ego as a defense mechanism to say, I'm afraid to be seen. But yet we're also shouting out and saying, but see me. But what version do we want to be seen as that align? Because that's not identity. That's not who you truly are. And it's hard to keep up with these two, we'll just say two egos or alter egos, but then what happens on another and another and another, that turns into the masking. And that is a subsequent of imposter syndrome, because being an imposter, it's this fear factor of being seen for who you really are. It goes back to what we just talked about. Who are you? And that's the beautiful thing. So imposter syndrome will keep you stuck. It'll keep you playing small. It'll minimize and mitigate everything that you think. And therefore, you're going to start becoming that version of what you're willing to accept. So when we step fully into that confidence and into that power, we start elevating above and we start, again, quieting the noise, walking and abiding, having confidence. And when we talk about how do we get there, let's talk about boundaries and self-care and the things that help us align that so we don't fall victim to all of what is out there in this external world that we can't help but infiltrate us, right? It's penetrating us on a level that sometimes it's hard to keep at bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boundaries. I don't know why women struggle with boundaries, except that it is that empathetic nature. We don't want to hurt feelings and that kind of thing. But it's like business or working in corporate or, you know, anything in the commerce area, we need to have boundaries. You know, I told you I was a realtor. And so, you know, as I was working with clients, they'd get emotional. That's not enough money. And I love this purple paint on the wall. You know, they get emotional. And I'd say, wait a minute. Okay, we're going to take emotion out of it. It all comes down to the numbers. Okay. Yes, I know there's sentimental value. It's not sentimental to them. So along the same lines of boundaries, it's like, if this is, okay, I have a client just yesterday. She was saying, hey, Jude, she is a copywriter, but she does really in-depth work. And she's like, you know, I'm concerned about, you know, should I put in the contract that, you know, only certain hours or you can only reach me during this time and how many revisions and whatever else? And I said, that's so interesting. Of course you can. Why would you think not? And she goes, well, I just don't know if they'd like it. And it's like, you know, wait a minute. It's not about whether somebody will like it. It is about you deciding, powerful decision-making, you deciding how you want to do business. And they get to choose if they're going to abide by those and agree to them or not. It's that easy. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage your listeners, like right now, think about boundaries. And they can come up anywhere, not just business, about boundaries with your spouse, boundaries with your kids. It's like, it is not bad for us to set expectations. And as one example, if somebody speaks to you in a way that you don't appreciate, say it and say, do not. And I'll give you a funny example. I have three sons. They're the loves of my life. This is my oldest son. He was about 15, 16, and he was starting to get taller than me. So then I got a little bit afraid. And I was a single mom at the time. And I remember one time he got a little lippy with me. He's a lot like his mommy. So he got a little lippy with me once. And I said, hey, Mike, let me tell you something. I looked him straight in the eye and I was shaking inside, but I don't think he saw it. I said, you will never, ever, ever speak to me like that again. Because if you do, just watch what happens. Do you understand me? And then with that, I'd say, because think about the Bible. It says, honor your parents. That wasn't honoring. Do you understand? Yes. I said, so what do you have to say? He goes, I'm sorry, mom. And you know, he never, ever spoke to me like that again. But what would have happened? I was afraid. Oh my gosh, if I don't nip this in the bud, it's going to get out of control. So think about that. Ladies, we have to set boundaries. It protects everybody so that everybody understands how we are moving forward.
Right. I love the examples you shared. And obviously boundaries are a huge part of our self-care, right? Because if we are just spread thin and we don't say or speak out what is right and what we're willing to accept and tolerate, we will get walked over. And for us, like, and going back to what you said, Judy, at the beginning, it's a man's world, right? And I'm not saying that in, you know, male versus female kind of concept, but it's the challenge. It's always feeling like you have to swim upstream because there's so many obstacles and challenges. But if we don't honor and respect our own boundaries and our worth and let people know, then that is where people will take advantage of you. And you wonder, well, why is this happening? Because unintentionally, you've accepted it. And that's not where us powerful, confident women are willing to just bend to what somebody wants to say or do. We have boundaries that are firm for that protection. And that's a form of self-care. It's a non-negotiable. And I know that you, obviously being in the law space as a lawyer, negotiation skills are a huge part of what we do, right? So we might not realize that we're negotiating because we're just advocating for ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, I love negotiating. And here's what I found, though. I remember being a young associate sitting in the room where these big guys were, you know, the partners were I worked in Delaware, so we had a corporate hub. We were talking about corporate stuff. I didn't really study that in law school a lot, so I was just sitting there. But I remember one time early on, there was a bunch of us associates and partners. When someone said something, something in my gut said, I had a thought, and I should have blurted it out, but I didn't. Oh, but a male associate spit it out. And everybody was like, oh my God, Jack, that was great. That was great. Meanwhile, I'm like, oh, darn it. Okay, the next time I get a thought, because I thought I might be wrong. Well, don't you know, in the same meeting, it happened again. And again, Judy was quiet. And anyway, so that's just one example when I realized, wait a minute, Jude, you got good instincts. Like, speak up. And even if it's wrong, so what? And so in this way of negotiation, when I work with clients and we're talking about maybe contracts with vendors or independent contractors and things, a lot of times they like don't even read it. They admit, Judy, I didn't even read it. I just signed it. And I said, oh my goodness, you have to read, because you have the ability to say, you know what? I'll give you an example. It might say 30 days notice to terminate. And I'd say, that seems a little long if we're not happy. Push back, quote unquote, go back and say that needs to be cut down to 7 days. And maybe they'll agree to 7 or maybe they'll agree to 14. But we can't be afraid to draw the line and say, oh, no, that doesn't make sense. Like you're thinking about, I said, look, that means you have to pay them for a month, even if you don't like their work. That just doesn't make sense. So negotiation is really, again, coming from this place of calm, confidence, and certainty, looking at what is important to you and the way you run your business to say, you know what, that's acceptable, but this isn't. And let's see if we can work together to find common ground.
Powerful. That is powerful. And having those negotiation skills allows you, again, to speak up, having those instincts and those intuitions, but having a voice and a platform to say something about it. And as Judy said, you know, sometimes you miss those opportunities. But once you start realizing that other people are validating what you're already thinking, it just gives you that confidence and permission to pipe up and say, hey, listen, I have thoughts, I have opinions, I have things to say, because you value and you matter. So I love everything on this conversation. And as we begin to wrap up today's episode, I know that you have a couple things on deck and some invitations to come connect with you and learn more about what you have going on.
Awesome. Thanks, Rachel. Well, first of all, I would love to connect wherever you are on social. Well, I'm not on TikTok. So LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, at Judy Weber Co. I would love for you to say, hey, I heard you on Rachel's show and let's connect. Okay. I'm one of those people who personally handles her DMs, not my team. So you'll know it's me, and I usually leave a voice note. So there's that. But at regular periods throughout the year, I put on a free 5-day challenge event for business owners. And it's called the Make Bold Offers Challenge. And inside, we talk about how to create bold offers, how to boldly market your offers and boldly sell your offers in an ethical, godly way, and even how to deliver that offer to serve your clients to the uttermost. It's happening in a couple of weeks from now. And that's at judyweber.co/makeboldoffers. And here, you're really going to learn how to transform the way you do business from a place of boldness, because God's daughters are called to be bold, right? We're not given a spirit of fear or timidity, but a spirit of power. So those are two great places. And of course, my podcast, the Joyful Business Podcast, you can search that wherever you listen to podcasts.
Awesome. So Judy, thank you so much for being our guest here. And of course, everything will be in the show notes below. So be sure to give Judy a follow and a like. And again, if this episode resonates, reach out. She's an open invitation, as she said. She's the one handling her DMs. So anything that you have questions or just want to thank her for today's episode, sharing so much wisdom and nuggets to take with you and apply into your life and your business, by all means, reach out to Judy. So thank you so much, Judy.
Thank you again, Rachel.
If today's conversation resonated with you and you're ready to step into your most confident, aligned, and free self, make sure to grab your free confidence blueprint. The first step to stop chasing, start aligning, and create a life and business you love. Grab yourself a copy by clicking on the link in the show notes below.
Hey there, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening.